Hey, I'm Tamara Kendacker, and I'm the host of Wait, There's More, Global's 20-minute daily news podcast. This week, we're dedicating all our episodes to the coronavirus pandemic. We're talking about it from a variety of different angles, from basic health questions to the impact this is going to have on the economy. We release a new episode every afternoon, and you can listen wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
The Ryan Jesperson Show, weekday mornings at 9 on 630 CHED.
I'm too anxious for this kind of music right now. We are completely switching gears. I feel like we could just play this for the rest of the hour, please, Bauer. Nice. After talking pipelines and NAFTA and supply management and the future of our dairy farmers and all of the money being wasted from our tax dollars, our hard-earned tax dollars, we are talking everything weddings and engagements because it's the season. If you flip through your social media account, I'm willing to bet that you see nothing but engagement announcements and people saying hashtag wedding season number 7 or whatever it is. And I do want to talk about that with the guests, about not making that bride and groom feel special about their day. So often we say, oh, we're on our 5th wedding of the summer, and it makes us feel super popular and important. But what does that say to the people who this is one of the most important days of their life? Maggie Barton Baird is a good friend of the show. She was actually on a wedding roundtable that we did a year ago, and we're talking more about how much we put into the wedding day and how maybe we don't put as much focus and love and attention into the marriage itself. This time we're talking everything do's and don'ts, and I'm hoping my guests will rat out some of the bridezillas and groomzillas they've had to deal with, but we'll see what happens. She is the owner and lead event planner with MB and Company, and joining us from Toronto, Greg Goa is the owner, music creator, and DJ at Market Sound Entertainment, and Bruce Clark is owner and photographer at Moments in Digital Photography. Hey, good morning, everybody.
Hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us on.
Hi, Maggie.
Hello.
Hey, okay, you got to tell us what's happening in Toronto this weekend that brought you out there from Edmonton.
Oh, so in addition to working weddings, I also work with a number of corporate clients, and one of my clients is a marketing agency here in Toronto. So I'm out here working on some top secret projects for them that I can't share too much about quite yet, but Kelsey and the rest of the group, you'll all be invited, and maybe we can be on the radio talking about it once it's a little more public.
Oh, I like it. We'll warm her up. We're only 5 minutes into this. By the end, she'll be spilling everything.
Spill the tea.
I have no concerns. What are you guys up to this weekend? We're still in full swing of wedding season.
I'm heading to set up a wedding for tomorrow for one of my guys, and then I go do another wedding right after that down at the Hotel Mac. And then tomorrow I'm in Lamont. And I got Carl down at Chateau Lacombe. So, yeah, we got a few events going on.
That's the voice of Greg Goa. I think it's okay to say, formerly a coworker of mine.
That's right.
Worked here at Chorus.
I had the inside track.
Yes. Yeah. And Bruce, what are you up to this weekend?
Off to Lac La Biche tomorrow. So, a wedding up in Lac La Biche. So.
Okay. It's the long weekend. This is actually one of the first long weekends in several years that I haven't had a wedding to attend. The long weekends are a big one. And I think often the bride and groom are thinking this is great for all of those that are attending from out of town. Not to harsh anyone's buzz. Is that something we can say? For those who are having weddings on the long weekend, is it also kind of unfair that you're stealing... You know, everyone has traditions already set for the May long. You're going to have it on the August long. I know you guys are going to probably tread carefully. But is it a little unfair to ask your guests to give up a long weekend to travel somewhere?
I actually personally love it because I think what it does for some of your guests who are maybe taking time off work isn't reasonable. Either they're paid hourly or they just have really fast-paced jobs. Or, like you said, they are going to a number of weddings out, like the entire summer. It allows them, if you have a Saturday wedding or a Sunday wedding, if they're coming from out of town, what it actually allows them to do is potentially not have to take any time off work, which I think for some people is a huge plus. Now, some of the weekends, when you're looking at kind of like Thanksgiving weekend and Victoria long weekend, yeah, sometimes people have traditions, but it's also kind of fun to shake that up a little bit and make a new tradition. I did a Thanksgiving wedding probably about 5 years ago, and it's one of my top Thanksgivings I've ever had. It was so warm, and it felt family-like because long weekends have this way of being kind of about family and gathering.
Bruce, I feel like you have something contrary to say.
I mean, there's good and the bad. I think Maggie makes some great points about it's great. You know, it's people that are coming from out of town, it's really convenient because they have that extra day. But I think because we only have, you know, a few precious long weekends in the summer, it's so short, you maybe have three long weekends. Speaking as a guest on the guest side of things, it can be a bit of like you're taking away my long weekend kind of thing for the wedding. So my recommendation is if you're going to do it on a long weekend, maybe do it on a Friday. Do it later in the day. People can just sort of cut out of work a little bit early, come to your wedding, have the party, do it all on Friday, and then they still have Saturday, Sunday, Monday to enjoy their long weekend. So, you know, that's one potential, you know, way to do it on a long weekend. I've also noticed New Year's Eve weddings are becoming a lot more popular, and people seem to really like that because it's almost like you have your built-in party plan for New Year's Eve weddings. So those have been a lot of fun.
I can totally attest to that. I had my first ever New Year's Eve wedding to attend this year, and everyone's looking for a good party. No one wants to stand in lines out in the cold trying to get into a bar if you don't already have tickets to an event. And there was something everyone's already there to party. There's drinks. It's a happy time. It's totally a positive environment. I would say that probably New Year's Eve is the one exception where I don't go bah humbug.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Greg, what about as a DJ? You probably totally dig long weekends, as it sounds like you have 17 to go to and run the show at.
Well, usually we can double up on events on long weekends, so that's great. If we can line up, you know, two or three weddings in a row or 3 days of weddings in a row, then, you know, most weekends it ends up being everything is on Saturday, so, you know, we might do up to five events on one day, and if we can spread them out a bit, that's awesome. Yeah.
Maggie, something that I had teed up in the beginning was how we just kind of lump in, like, hashtag wedding season, and we often aren't posting pictures of the bride and groom or their beautiful ceremony. We're taking pictures of us because we're dolled up, and then we're just saying this is number five of the six weddings I have to attend or number two of three. Does it totally diminish how special the day is for that bride and groom on that day?
I think it can. I mean, the reality is we're all probably, especially in a certain age range, attending a lot of weddings in kind of one summer. And I mean, it can get expensive and you can feel like you're, you know, just going to another one. But at the end of the day, it still is that couple's day, exactly like you said, Kelsey, and it's important to them. But I think kind of from the planning perspective of it, to set yourself up for success, if you know that you're part of a wedding season that has a lot of people, is to remind yourself to plan a wedding that's like genuinely authentic to you. And that will translate into the guest's experience. But as a guest, I would say, counting the number of weddings that you're going to, maybe avoid that. Maybe focus on making the couple feel like their day special, because it is. It's special in its own way. So, yeah, that's probably the summarization of my thoughts on that.
I would suggest that maybe one of my wedding pet peeves, and I'm really interested to hear what yours are. This kind of falls under the do's and don'ts of weddings. As a photographer, Bruce, what's one thing that people just, you're like, if you had just done this, it would have been a heck of a lot easier, or how they kind of waste your time. What's something that really stands out at weddings?
Oh, boy. I think just thinking about your timeline is really important, and thinking about, like, where are you having your wedding, what time of year is it? I'm meeting with a couple recently, and they're planning a wedding in January, and she's like, oh, we'll do the ceremony at 5 o'clock, and then we'll go out afterwards and do photos, and I said, you have to stop and think, it's going to be dark outside. And she's like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. So they had to rethink their whole timeline and everything. So just not thinking about kind of the timeline. And I think the other thing that guests really appreciate, a lot of things we're seeing now with photography, is a lot of couples are opting to do a first look and do all their photos up front before the ceremony, so that there isn't that big gap of time where the guests have to sort of figure out, like, what do we do for these 3 or 4 hours in between, so they can sort of, we do, you know, family photos, and then they can roll right into the reception. So that's kind of considering your guests and their experience as well, I think. So that's one of the things a trend that I'm seeing a little bit more.
What about you, Greg?
Well, kind of in addition to that, it goes back to the timeline, but more, you know, at the event itself. I find at receptions, there's some couples that will do a lot of games, or so, you know, they might have the shoe game, and then they'll also have everybody make a speech, and you can really kind of pack the night into a point where everybody's just really had enough, and you want them to be, you know, have time to visit with their friends and family that they know. A lot of people are visiting from out of town, so you don't get to see them very often. I think it's good to make sure you have enough space in there so everybody can visit. And it's nice to bring the attention to you, but you're going to get that no matter what. So if you kind of limit how many games you do and that sort of thing, then kind of opens up the evening and makes it a little bit more enjoyable for everybody, I find.
Specifically for you, when it comes to letting you do your job, I know that there's a real art to being a DJ and keeping the floor packed and also knowing when to give people a break with a slower song or whatever it may be. I imagine you probably have a lot of couples who say, this is the type of genre of music I want you to play. I don't want you to play the pop culture songs. And does that put you in a tough spot because you know that they're going to end up complaining to you later that no one was dancing?
Not too much. Like, we really focus on trying to get as much information out of our clients as possible. And most of the time, if a client likes specific genres or artists, they're going to be, their crowd will too. Most of the time. Sometimes they'll be like, no, we don't want any Chicken Dance or YMCA, all of that stuff, kind of the standards. And then that sort of, you know, those songs, as much as some people don't love them, they can really work at a wedding. There's a reason why, you know, the YMCA has probably heard at almost every wedding. And some people just hate that stuff. So, you know, it doesn't fly, or you don't end up doing it. But I really just try, we try to get the most information out of somebody, and because they know their crowd, and usually those requests end up working really well. If somebody has two, I find the biggest problem is somebody has like a really limited scope of what they want to hear. So if they're like, we only want hip hop or we only want country, I think it's good to spread it out because you're going to have most likely around 200, 150, 200 guests. Everybody has different tastes, so you want to apply, you know, you want to appeal to everybody in the crowd and give everybody a chance to hear a little bit of what they like. So as long as your scope is a bit wide enough, I think, you know, we can definitely work with that.
Maggie, as a wedding planner, what's one thing that just kind of drives you crazy?
I think Bruce touched on it as well. It's the timeline is key with wedding days. I mean, it's like 95% of what I do with my clients. I think that people have attended all these weddings and have been thinking about their wedding for a while, whether that's, you know, since they were five or, you know, since they ended up in the relationship with this person. And often it's easy to be excited about doing all these things or making decisions and being like, oh, we'll just figure it out. So it's really important to go through the schedule and to look at the breakdown of everything that's happening in the day and think to yourself, does this make sense? What would the experience be with based on this? The other point that I tell a lot of couples in regard to schedule is if you're very introverted, you know, if the idea of having all of this attention on you and being pushed into different spots and all this kind of stuff, if that's scary to you or you're just introverted and you need to recharge in the middle of the day, you also have to plan for that too. So like Bruce was talking about, we are seeing a lot of couples doing a first look and doing photos before the ceremony. So if you're introverted, it's best to plan that and then maybe book like a half an hour before the ceremony where you can just like sit, put your feet up, eat a sandwich, go for a walk, and just get a little bit of a break so that you can keep recharging so you can have the most enjoyable day and not feel like you're just being pulled by everyone.
One of Ched Nation's favorite things to discuss and to be angry about is wedding gifts. We're going to go there now. We have you guys for the hour, Greg and Bruce in studio, Maggie joining us from Toronto. So we'll talk about it now because I think it's going to blow up, and then we'll tackle some of the do's and don'ts and how you manage bridezillas and groomzillas, whether you're in their wedding party, if you're a family member and trying to figure out how to be supportive or how to get them in line. And then we'll just see where it goes. Maggie Barton-Baird is the owner and lead event planner at MB and Company. Greg Goa is the owner and DJ at Market Sound Entertainment. And Bruce Clark is owner and a photographer at Moments in Digital Media or Digital Photography. Got it. Our Friday wedding roundtable continues here on 630 Chat. I'm Kelsey Campbell in studio with Greg Goa, the owner and DJ at Market Sound Entertainment, Bruce Clark, owner and photographer at Moments in Digital Photography, and on the line in Toronto right now, Edmonton girl though, Maggie Barton-Baird, who is the owner and lead event planner at MB and Company. Okay, we're talking gifts and we're talking expenses. Greg, when you first hopped into studio, you shared a fantastic story that I know is going to make people's heads explode.
Well, that was not a story that I specifically was dealt with, but I think a lot of people have heard about this bride who requested that every one of her guests bring pitch $1,000 or $1,500 to her wedding, and it all blew up in her face, and now she's not getting married. So,
but she's mad at the guests. This is one thing. People hate the idea of giving a gift or giving cash if it means cover. It's kind of like an understanding. You give as much as it would to cover the plate. So if you're at a pretty high-end, swanky wedding, you're going to be giving a more of a significant contribution because they're putting out more money. People are saying, well, no, if you want me to be your guest, you're blessed with my presence. You don't need a present. Maggie, what are your thoughts as a wedding planner?
I feel like this is the only thing we ever talk about when I come on your show, Kelsey.
It's because people are crazy about it.
Totally. I think last time we were like, we're not going to talk about it. And then the text line went crazy and we were like, we're going to talk about it. So because I come from the planning side of this with the couple, I think I might have a bit of a, maybe not unpopular opinion, but more along the lines of seeing it from the perspective of the couple. If you go to somebody's house for a dinner party, you usually bring them some type of gift. Now, you don't think about it to yourself of being like, my plate's going to cost $40, I should bring a $40 bottle of wine. But, you know, you usually bring a bottle of wine or you bring flowers or whatever. And that's kind of the same idea with weddings. Now, I'm a big advocate that you shouldn't bankrupt yourself because you're going to a wedding. Your friends have a rough idea of where you're at and what's kind of going on. So say, you know, everybody's saying, you know, you should be giving $150 a plate. It's an open bar. It's a beautiful dinner. It's a huge wedding. But that's not, like, that doesn't make sense for you, or that's not financially viable. You know, people have kids in school. They have new babies. You know, they're on EI, whatever. What you can do instead of giving a bunch of money is do something really meaningful. So, you know, if you are looking at a wedding that you should probably be giving $150, but that's just not in your budget, that's not possible, that doesn't matter to most couples. What matters more to them is that you're there. And so you can give something meaningful. Say, you know, say Kelsey was getting married and we had talked about this, like, amazing wine that I loved at this vineyard or whatever. I could just bring that and give that to her, and it should be cool. Your friendship should be way bigger than, you know, giving $1,500 at a wedding, which is...
No, I want more.
Well, Kelsey, we can talk later.
A text from stone carver Steve. He said, I carved a stone and hid $500 inside, and my niece confessed that her husband threw the stone out. They never saw the money. When you're going to do something beautiful and thoughtful like that, I think you need to put, like, a little note in the car that says, the rock opens up.
Yeah, there's something in the air.
I want to use this kind of as a transition when we talk about what people are willing to spend on their weddings and then expectations of their gifts. Are you guys, and I'm not trying to put you in a tough spot, are you often surprised when you get pushback about the cost of your services? Because that always seems to be something that people are a little bit more frustrated about or feel like they should be able to negotiate, but they're willing to drop $3,000 on fresh flowers.
Oh, I'm definitely not surprised because it happens all the time. But, you know, it's like everything. You kind of get what you pay for, and there's a, once you get into that middle area where you find most of the DJs, at least in the DJ side of it, are charging a pretty decent amount of money, and that's what anybody of quality is going to be in that range. So if you're going and trying to bargain down to what the real entry-level guys are doing, then you're probably not going to get the sort of quality and service that you want. And the last thing you want is for your guests to be taken off at 9 o'clock because the DJ doesn't listen to you or is just kind of doing his own thing. So
I'm kind of throwing my husband's cousins under the bus a little bit, but at their wedding they decided to save costs. They got a huge, beautiful venue, but they decided they didn't want to invest in a DJ, and they plugged in their personal iPod, and it would end up being on a playlist of slow country songs. It was, people were bailing out of there at 7:30.
Yeah, I've seen that before. We had a wedding at the art gallery, beautiful wedding. They spent a lot on decor, flowers, everything else, and then they went with just somebody's iPod, and they had technical problems and they couldn't get it connected, and they wasted a half an hour trying to troubleshoot that. So as a result, their first dance was late. They ended up having to pay us overtime. So it ended up costing them more in the long run, yeah, trying to skimp out on one particular area.
Well, so, and one thing people don't realize is that the DJ is really almost like kind of balancing the expectations of the entire crowd. So, you know, when if you're not happy with what the DJ is playing, often it's because they're playing a request from somebody else. So if you see two people on the dance floor for one song, it might be that they're just open to requests and end up playing just about every request, and then that couple really wanted to hear it, but maybe it's not your cup of tea. But we're always kind of juggling a lot of different expectations, so it's not an easy job. And if you just think that you can put a playlist in front of, you know, have a playlist plugged into a speaker, then it just doesn't make for the same level of party, you know, or excitement on the dance floor, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, the Friday Wedding Roundtable continues after the 6:30 Ched News with Maggie Barton Baird, Greg Goa, and Bruce Clark. DJ in the room was absolutely right. You can't keep me in my seat right now. I gotta get out on the dance floor.
Animal House version, actually.
Oh.
Who does that one? I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I like that version even better. But anyway, they all work. Any version of Shout.
If you're tuning in, you're like, yeah, I want to shout right now with all of the crazy news that's happening politically. This is not the roundtable right now. If you missed the conversations, we covered it in great detail from 9 until 11. But we all need just to take a little bit of a breath, maybe throw a smile on and think about something else as we go into our long weekend. And that's why it is the Friday Wedding Roundtable with Maggie Barton Baird. She's the owner and lead event planner at MB & Company. It's based out of Edmonton, but she's joining us from Toronto. Greg Goa is the owner and a DJ at Market Sound Entertainment. And Bruce Clark is the owner and a photographer at Moments in Digital Photography. And actually, Bruce, you mentioned that you shot Jacqueline Sweeney's wedding. She's one of our colleagues here downstairs at Kissin' Country.
Yeah, sure did, yeah. A couple, a few years ago now. And we got to go down to the Calgary Zoo, and it was a lot of fun. And we got to go in the penguin exhibit, which we had a blast.
She got to take over the Calgary Zoo, which is pretty special.
Pretty cool.
I'd love to hear from all of you some of your favorite venues. What made that wedding particularly unique and they thought outside the box, whether it was doing it on a rooftop or doing it in a basement or wherever it may be?
I actually did a wedding last weekend at Telus Field, and they had fireworks and games all out in the field. I had to set up two different systems. So we had one system in the lounge and one system out on the field. It was amazing. They had it all.
The prospects were there.
The fireworks were 25 minutes. Oh, yeah.
They sang them down the aisle.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah, we've had a few different venues. Obviously, the zoo was really cool. That was a different experience, and getting to get in with the penguins, which was pretty neat. And the penguins tried to nest in Jack's dress. It was kind of cute.
That is so sweet.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. We recently did a wedding on the riverboat, so that was a lot of fun. And they took their guests for like a surprise, it wasn't midnight, but sunset sail down the river, and it was kind of cool. And that was my first time on the riverboat, so that was really cool.
Yeah, I've never been. How many guests would that have held?
I want to say they had about 100 on the boat, so yeah.
Yeah, it up to 300, though.
Oh, they can. Ooh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That must have made for some nice pictures.
It was good, yeah. We had a really neat view of the city skyline and stuff, so that was really, really cool. So that was fun. And then we had one wedding in India that was really cool. We got to go all the way to India, and we photographed the wedding, and it was in this palace in the middle of a lake, and they'd filmed a James Bond movie there. So that was kind of cool. That was a cool location. Yeah.
How'd you get that gig?
Yeah.
They were actually a couple from Calgary, and we had photographed her brother's wedding in Edmonton, and they loved us, and just felt comfortable with us and said, hey, want to come with us to India? We said, sure.
Maggie, I promise I'm going to get to you, but I want to ask the follow-up question about how that works. They would pay your expenses, right, for that trip to India? That's a part of the deal.
That's part of the deal, yeah. Yeah, so we went over, and it was nice. We'd wanted to go to India anyway, so it was great, and so we took some time afterwards and traveled and saw India and Nepal while we were there as well. So, yeah, it was good. But it's a lot of work, and you also have to think, like, destination weddings, they can be quite a bit of work for the vendors involved because you're dealing with bringing your gear there and worried about, you know, backup and safety and kind of all of those things. So it's not just a simple. It's not a holiday for us. It's, you know, it is a lot of work, and So, yeah.
But I do get the appeal of spending the extra coin on having someone that you could meet with in person in your hometown, really set up a plan. And then when you get there, you're not dealing with someone that, like, the resort provides you, and you're going to end up disappointed at the end of the day. I'm sure they do a great job, too, there.
They do, yeah. And you have to follow the rules, too. You have to make sure that where you're going to, some countries, you know, it's a no-no, right? You can't go in there and work in other countries. You have to really kind of, you know, make sure and check. And some venues don't allow outsiders to come in. And so you have to check, do your due diligence before you plan something like that, like a destination wedding. That's probably a whole other topic that, you know, Maggie could probably expand on more in more detail.
Well, some cities actually require that you get a business license too, like within that city. So even like some of our mountain towns in Alberta, as a wedding planner, if I'm going with a wedding that I've fully planned in Edmonton with a couple from Edmonton, but the wedding itself is taking place in a mountain city, often you have to actually buy a business license within that city and kind of register with them so that they know what you're all about and what you're doing. So Bruce is right. There's a lot of complex issues with them, or I shouldn't say issues, barriers, or, you know, things to kind of pass through when you're doing destination weddings and you're bringing vendors with you.
That's some great insight. And now, Maggie, your favorite venues that you've gotten to work in?
The first one in Edmonton, I would say, is the Streetcar. You know, doing a wedding there, watching the sunset over top of the entire city with only 30 people is the greatest. It's the greatest little spot to get married. The problem is only 30 people can come, so you got to kind of figure out who your kind of closest pals are. But it's a stunning view, and it's so cool. And if you're like a deep, deep Edmonton lover like I am, the history there is really cool. So that's definitely my favorite spot in Edmonton. Recently, both in Waterton and in Canmore, I've done weddings where we've rented out a B&B or an inn that normally is rotating a number of rooms, and we just book the whole place out. And usually when you're talking about inns and B&Bs that are a little bit smaller, you can get really beautiful locations that are remote, in the mountains, have amazing views, and those are my favorite. Because, you know, in Canmore, you can have the perfect view of the Three Sisters from your balcony, and you wake up, and then you just get married in the same space, and your whole family's there. Those are definitely my favorites. I haven't been to India like Bruce, but, I mean, I'm open for it, so let me know.
You're such a romantic in the way that you set a scene. I love it. I one of my regrets, you were talking about deciding on the size of your guest list, and one of my biggest regrets was not being more thoughtful in the different stages of my life. I felt after the fact that I should have invited more people. I know that a lot of people 20 years down the road, I've even had coworkers say, I invited a bunch of colleagues that I worked with and I was really young. I see them in my wedding photos. I don't even remember their name. I think that I worked with them. But for me right now, I mean, I've only been married for 2.5 years now. I wish that I invited more extended family, more of my parents' friends, because I put it down. I said, I want to keep costs tight. And now I really regret that.
I think there's kind of a sweet spot, because if you go to the extreme in the other end, I have had couples who came to me the other night, they're like, we didn't even get to dance because we were talking to people the whole time. So if you have like 250 plus, you're going to be busy all night. You're not going to have a lot of chance to kind of let loose with your friends, because your every cousin and aunt is probably going to want to say hi to you at some point. And if you think 250 people and they each take 2 minutes of your time, you know, that's your whole day. So yeah. It's kind of a balance. I find that kind of 150 area seems to be maybe 175
spot,
or up to 200 is really good for sort of not being too busy, but still having everybody you probably really need to be there.
I wanted to ask you guys how much the buy and sell pages have changed things for weddings. And then the way now, I guess it's like the new version of word of mouth, right? That's the idea. If you're a wicked DJ, someone who's attended it, they're like, I love the music, love the vibe. I want you at my, I was at a friend's wedding, I want you. And I think that's still a thing. But for the most part, no one does their research anymore on their own time. They go onto Facebook and they say, in search of a hairstylist, in search of a photographer, who do you suggest? And then they get about 60 suggestions and then they start their search. Has this been a huge benefit to the three of you in getting known and more exposure, or has it started limiting your exposure because people are just going, oh, my buddy Aaron is really good?
Well, personally, I haven't. I've done a little bit with the Facebook buy and sell stuff, but most of my business ends up coming from Google AdWords, or we have a lot of reviews online. So most, we find a lot of clients who are doing like deep diving on reviews tend to come to us because we have a pretty solid reputation in that respect. So we haven't. I probably need to put more work into the Facebook buy and sell side of it, because I do post on there a little bit, but there's so many vendors on there, it's kind of I don't know if it makes sense for me to spend my time there or to wait for them to come to me through my other channels. So I probably wouldn't be the best one to ask.
No, yeah, I find for us personally, I think the Facebook buy and sell groups are the great race to the bottom in the photography industry. People oftentimes shopping there are looking for who's the cheapest. They don't necessarily care about the quality or their portfolio. And we want couples who want to hire us. You know, if you look at our reviews, most of the couples, it's not about our photography. It's about the experience they had working with us. We're a husband and wife team. And that's quite often why we've had couples, you know, that are in the wedding party that have booked us sight unseen without seeing the photographs, but just because of the experience they had working with us. So if your focus is solely price, you know, I get it. People have a budget and we're, you know, people don't have piles of money and everything, but I think there's also a perception that because the word wedding is attached to it, everything's expensive, but we're not going home at the end of the day and rolling around in a pile of money like Scrooge McDuck. You know, we're trying to make a living and it's getting harder and harder. The market's getting very saturated in Edmonton. And part of that is these buy and sell groups. There's no barriers to setting up a business. You could buy a camera tomorrow or a set of DJ equipment tomorrow and go on a buy and sell group and say, I'll do your wedding for $500, and you don't necessarily get the quality. They're not going to have insurance, probably not going to have a license. These kinds of things, right? So, you know, you hear horror stories of photographers losing images, right? And that's intentional. They didn't plan properly. They're not using the right equipment that ensures those things aren't going to happen. And those things cost money. And that's why we're where we are. So
yeah,
I've found the buy and sell groups not where we want to be.
Maggie, what kind of direction are you giving to your couples when they're coming to you? Because I know one of the major benefits of getting a wedding planner is they know a ton of vendors. You can make your own recommendations. But it does seem that the buy and sell is a great way to cut costs. You can use the same table runners. You can use the same vases that people have out. Are you directing people there, or are you still trying to help your friends out and make sure that they're getting those fresh sales?
I find the buy and sell pages feel a little bit like that group chat that you don't pay attention to, and then you flip your phone over and there's like 700 unmissed messages and you're like, I'm done, I'm already out, like, I'm not wearing black to the party even though I'm supposed to, I didn't read all the way up. So they kind of feel that way to me. So I generally avoid using them for my clients. And I know, I've been in the industry long enough, I know who's legit and who's not. And if you really look at those buy and sell pages, you'll see probably every three somebody's talking about exactly what Bruce said. The photographer lost my images, I never got them. This DJ showed up with only one speaker and I couldn't whatever, because it's very low entry. So I am very cautious of the buy and sell pages. However, the one place that I find that they are kind of useful for the couples that I'm not doing full planning for, but I'm doing wedding day management, which is when they plan and then I come in and help execute the actual day. I find it's a good place to get a deal on buying decor. So if you're wanting some pieces for your wedding and you're like, oh, I could probably keep that in my house later, or I could probably use it again, it's not a bad place to buy stuff, because some people have gone out and they've bought all of their decor and now they're trying to sell it. So it's not a bad place for that, because people will discount it because they've used it. But in general, if you are using the buy and sell pages, I recommend that you don't use that as the only referral service. I recommend that you go and read reviews or privately talk to somebody who's used that vendor, get some info about them, or maybe pay a wedding planner for a consultation, and just ask a bit more about those people. Because there's nothing wrong with being in the early stages of your business, but we just want to make sure that you are taking it very, very seriously. And there's a few like little red flags that I always look for when I work with vendors, to just be like, maybe we should look somewhere else. So that's kind of a helpful way to navigate those buy and sell. I'd also be cautious of vendors being on there and suggesting their own business, but not being upfront that it's their business, which has happened to a couple of mine.
Okay. We are going to go to a quick break, and I want to do some rapid-fire questions that are industry-specific for each of you. So text in now your questions that are photog-related, DJ-related, and event planning, and we're going to fire them off rapid-fire style.
Pack it up, pack it in, let me begin.
The Friday Wedding Roundtable continues with Maggie Barton Baird, Greg Goa, and Bruce Clark. Bruce, this was your request. Why is it number one on the music list for you?
That gets me out on the dance floor at every wedding, so that gets me going.
Yeah, well, it works well.
Hey, I guess while we're talking music, what kind of wedding goers are you when you actually just get to attend? Are you the first one out on the dance floor, or are you the one who's going to work the crowd and chat and make sure the open bar is well attended to?
Personally, I'm always, if I'm not DJing myself, then I got one of my guys there. So I have to, I'm always like still kind of working usually. So it's been a long time since I just attended a wedding without having any influence.
That's a good point. Do any of you relax at a wedding, even if you aren't working? Or are you just being critical of how the DJs run in the music? Or you're like, oh, that photographer is missing a beautiful moment right now. And Meg, you're like, I would have had this to better time.
I love attending weddings. I love it. I get to like enjoy it. And I actually don't really think about it. Like, unless something obviously goes really wrong, I'm like, ooh, they probably should have planned for this or whatever. But I'm not picky, and I own the dance floor. I'm like, I'm a dance floor person. Sweet Caroline is the one that'll get me to
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Every time.
Yeah.
My sister got married a couple of years ago, and she's in Montreal, and they played Cadillac Ranch, which I didn't know they were going to play, and I literally, like, booked it from the bathroom onto the dance floor solo in front of 300 people to Cadillac Ranch.
I love that. Okay, we have 2 minutes. I want to throw some rapid-fire questions your way. Bruce, for you, I know that when it comes to weddings and photography, we're all looking to be unique, and we want that magazine shot, and we see the ones that just go viral everywhere, and we think, well, we're a better-looking couple than them. Mm-hmm. We could do better. Do you find that everyone's trying to find that unique shot, or they want you to push the limits even further to get it perfect?
It depends on the couple. Some couples want that kind of really unique shot, and we have to be, you know, set the expectations that if you want that really like beautiful sunset photo, for example, we have to make sure you carve, back to my, you know, timeline point, you got to carve time out of your timeline to make sure we go out at sunset and capture something like that. So if that's something that they really want, I'm finding more couples, they want, you know, more intimate weddings. Smaller weddings has been a bit of a trend I've noticed, and they just want to enjoy things with their guests and have it documented more so than those. So it depends on the couple. But
follow-up question, yeah. Are you doing any photos ahead of the wedding day with brides and grooms, or after the day because they wanted more shots, or they didn't want to take more time away from their guests?
We haven't done a lot of that. Obviously, we do engagement sessions. That's usually something that we do with a lot of our couples. But I do know that there are some photographers in the city that specialize in more, like, they call them adventure sessions, where they will go off just the couple, you know, usually in the mountains or somewhere really pretty. Mm-hmm. It's a big trend over in Asia, where they will hire photographers to go to, like, Australia with them. And like, I've saw this one amazing photographer that they went to the Lord of the Rings kind of hobbit village and did this amazing photo shoot there afterwards, and it was like $30,000 to go do this afterwards. But yes, yeah, so I've seen that as a little bit of a trend, but not something we've done.
Greg, what's one song you never want to hear again because it's so overplayed at weddings, and what's one song that just doesn't get old?
Oh, that's pretty hard to say. It all goes back to, like, you know, if a client wants something, I'm going to do it.
No, we're not doing the client. What song do you never want to hear again?
That I never want to hear again?
You just, know it's going to play at every wedding, and you're like, nah.
This is terrible business to say it, but Ed Sheeran, I think they're great slow dance songs, but everybody picks it for a first dance. So if you're doing it, I'm happy to DJ your wedding, and I'll play it.
Okay, Maggie, I'm already in overtime, but I want you to have a turn. What would you say is the trend of this wedding season when it comes to decor or the setup?
I would say small weddings, exactly what Bruce said. Keep it small, keep it intimate, keep it authentic.
Wow, that was perfect. Thank you so much, you guys. It's such a great way to get sent into the long weekend.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Maggie Barton Baird. She's the owner and lead event planner at MB & Company. You can find her at mbandcompany.ca. Greg Goa is the owner and DJ at Market Sound Entertainment. MarketSound.ca is his website. Bruce Clark is the owner and a photographer at Moments in Digital Photography. MomentsInDigital.com is where you can find him. Have a fabulous long weekend. We'll be back here live. Ryan, back in this chair come Tuesday morning.
The Ryan Jesperson Show, weekday mornings at 9 on 630 CHED.